morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Millions of Americans are back in school this autumn. Students, teachers, principals, administrators, janitors, bus drivers, etc. They attend, teach, administrate, or try to keep clean public schools, parochial schools, both religious and secular, which include boarding schools and military academies. In addition, experimental schools, community-based private schools, and home education curriculums attempt to extend the concepts of education beyond standard practices that are at the heart of increasing public acclaim and criticism. Ideas of educational reform abound in practice as well as theory. The general goal of most reforms is to make public education work for everyone. Yet, a controversial claim of a major decline in academic standards is blamed on exactly that premise. Harry Johnson of Astoria once wrote for the now defunct newspaper I used to publish, the North Coast Times-Eagle, "The kids arrive at first grade full of energy and expectations. By the fourth grade, they are ground down by boredom, humiliation, and irrelevance. By the sixth grade, most hate school." And now, by Margaret Renkel, who wrote this for the New York Times, "One Blue Feather, A Changed World." It was lying in the street, rocking gently with the turns of a placid wind. At first, I thought it was some bit of detritus set free by a garbage truck, the driver hurrying to complete his rounds before the temperature reached that day's brutal high. By the time I got close enough to see that it wasn't any sort of trash at all, the wind had lifted it and tossed it into our yard, a blue jay's tail feather newly molted. In late summer, many resident songbirds undergo a full molt, leaving behind their old, battered feathers and growing, gleaming new ones in their place. The new feathers will be needed to offer the best insulation against the cold winter and to make the bird's best case for a mate come spring. The blue jay this feather once belonged to was already in the process of gaining a shiny new version of itself. But the time between old feathers and new is hard for birds. They feel bad. They're cross with one another. Blue jays and cardinals especially tend to lose many feathers at once. Sometimes they spend a few weeks completely bald. A bird without a full set of feathers is vulnerable. During the molt, they keep quiet and close to the shadows. I left the blue jay feather where I found it last week. In nature, someone always makes use of what someone else doesn't need. Another creature will use it to line a nest or a burrow. I carried that feather with me all week in other ways, though. As with Wordsworth, the world has been too much with me lately, and I welcome the reminder of the blue jay's world. Though threatened, at least some things in nature are still timeless, proceeding exactly as they should. I wish I could say the same for us. In our world, just days after a 14-year-old is alleged to have killed four people in Apology High School in Georgia and wounded nine others, a 6-year-old in Memphis brought a loaded gun to school, passing it around for classmates to handle. Days after that, schools were closed in southern Kentucky while authorities searched for an assailant who shot five strangers driving on Interstate 75. In the 25 years since the massacre at Columbine High School, advocates for common sense gun laws have been indefatigable their ranks continually growing. Yet, here we are again. The threats reportedly made beforehand by both the Georgia shooter and the fugitive in Kentucky were not enough to save their innocent victims here in the gun-soaked American South. I don't want my kids to go to school in a place where they feel like you have to have additional security, the Republican nominee for Vice President, J.D. Vance, said in response to the Georgia shooting. But that is increasingly the reality that we live in, a reality that his party has no intention of remedying. Meanwhile, over on the reputedly liberal side of the country, California is taking advantage of a June Supreme Court ruling that permits cities to ban outdoor sleeping and remove homeless encampments. Around here, we're familiar with this kind of law. In 2022, Tennessee became the first state to make sleeping on public property a felony. What does it say about the current state of the United States of America that one of the few things still uniting us is a willingness to criminalize poverty? Even when a low-income family is on the path to home ownership, if they have the help of a nonprofit like Habitat for Humanity, say, or if they are living in homes their parents or grandparents paid for, they can still be in danger of foreclosure because insurance premiums keep going up as climate calamities keep bearing down. So this is where we are. People cannot afford rent, and they cannot afford insurance on a house they own, and they will go to jail if they sleep outdoors. Sometimes I don't know how to keep believing in the possibility of justice, true justice, I mean, not the parody of justice the current Supreme Court keeps dishing out, when problems like gun violence and homelessness and the climate emergency, among so many other deep systemic injustices, seem utterly intractable. How does a person maintain enough hope to believe that change is possible when nothing ever seems to change? In my lowest moments, I look to the people who have devoted their lives to pursuing change anyway. I look to the gun sense advocates pressing for laws that will keep children safe in schools, to the believers who pray outside prisons on execution days, to all the conservation organizations fighting to hold governments accountable for protecting the earth. Most of all, I look to Charlie Strobel, who died last year after giving his life to God and the unhoused. In her foreword to The Kingdom of the Poor, a memoir by Father Strobel that will be published by Vanderbilt University Press, Ann Patchett recalls that her friend's ordination card was printed with the words of Robert Kennedy, quote, "Few of us have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation," unquote. That is just what Father Strobel did. Over the years, he managed to bring his congregation, and then his diocese, and then his whole city, to an understanding of what we owe to our unhoused neighbors. Last month, Nashville opened its first permanent housing development for the homeless. In addition to furnished studio apartments, it offers addiction treatment, mental health support, and job counseling. The facility is named Strobel House. When I feel helpless at the thought of all the seemingly unsolvable problems our species faces, I remind myself of the political vicissitudes Father Strobel weathered in his quiet quest for justice over more than five decades of service. Mayors came and went, governors came and went. Tennessee shifted from solid blue to a sea of red. But Charlie Strobel never wavered. Cot by cot, and peanut butter sandwich by peanut butter sandwich, he fed his homeless neighbors and gave them a safe place to sleep. And he taught us to do the same. I thought of Father Strobel again last week when I saw that blue jay's feather in the grass. Birds lose their old feathers at the end of summer, but even as the old feathers drop, new ones are already growing. Those birds feel awful, as I sometimes do, as we all sometimes do, but a change is coming for them and perhaps for us. Even when the prospect of transformation seems very far from certain, I remind myself to keep faith with that possibility, to work toward making it a reality. A change is coming. Surely, someday, a change is coming. And that was One Blue Feather, A Changed World by Margaret Renkel, who is the author of the books The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year, Graceland at Last, and Late Migrations. And she wrote that for the New York Times. And now, by Elizabeth Warren, What Donald Trump Is Not Telling Us. During the presidential debate, Donald Trump was pressed on the details of his plan to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something better, and that's in quotes. The question should have been a softball. After all, Trump has been promising the American people a plan for 9 years, so he has had time to prepare. His answer, after ducking and weaving, he came up with, "I have concepts of a plan." That's not a plan. Plans translate values into action. They test the quality of the ideas and the seriousness of the people advancing them. Plans reveal for whom candidates will fight and how effective they are likely to be. And in a presidential race, if either party's nominee is asked about his or her plans for something as fundamental as health care, voters should get a straight answer. The problem is not that Trump can't think up a way to put his values into action. The problem is that when he and other Republican leaders produce plans with actual details, they horrify the American people. Trump's health care values have been on full display for years. In 2017, Republicans controlled Congress, and their first major legislative undertaking was a bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Every time they drafted something, independent experts would point out that their plan would toss tens of millions of people off their health insurance, jack up premium costs, and slash benefits for those with ongoing health problems. After months of wrangling, Trump and Republican lawmakers voted a bill through the House to repeal the ACA. That night, Mr. Trump hosted a party at the White House to celebrate their big step toward taking away health care from millions of people. ACA repeal then moved to the Senate. Republicans had the majority, so if they all stuck with Mr. Trump, the ACA would die. As senators gathered to vote, nearly all of the Democrats, including Kamala Harris, then a senator from California, remained standing, too anxious even to sit down. We murmured stories about who would be affected by this vote. The uncle who had cancer and would lose coverage. The kid diagnosed with a heart anomaly whose parents would not be able to afford new insurance. The college students who would just go without coverage and hope they did not fall on ice or get in a car accident. We felt the weight of people's lives on the line. As the votes rolled in, we could see that Trump was on track to win. Our last hope was John McCain. When McCain put his thumb down, he saved the Affordable Care Act. That one vote made the difference for millions of Americans between losing and keeping their health care coverage. Over time, people have decided that they like the access to health care that the ACA gives them. Republican losses in 2018 and 2020 are often attributed in part to Mr. Trump's efforts to take away the ACA. Republican members of Congress have since smartened up and stopped talking about repeal. Trump, however, was unbowed. He doubled down on getting rid of the ACA, saying last year that it sucks and that Republicans should never give up, and that's a quote, on repealing it. But at the debate, Trump displayed a new strategy. He seems to realize that his health care plans are deeply unpopular, so he simply does not talk about them. Thus, after 9 years of railing against the ACA and trying mightily to repeal it, he has moved to concepts of a plan, quote unquote, without a single detail that anyone can pin him down on. The new strategy might have worked, except Trump's right-wing buddies have already laid out the plans. No need for concepts. Project 2025 has 920 pages translating Republican values into detailed action plans, including on health care. Repeal the ACA, cut Medicare benefits, end $35 insulin, stop Medicare drug price negotiations, cut health care access for poor families, restrict contraceptive care, jeopardize access to IVF, ban medication abortion. As Project 2025's favorability plummets, Trump is once again scrambling. "I have nothing to do with Project 2025, he claimed at the debate. "I'm not going to read it." But it was written by many members of Trump's former administration, and over 250 of the policies in the plan match his past or current policy proposals. While Trump dances around concepts of a plan, that's a quote, that will rip away health care access for millions, Vice President Harris and Democrats in Congress are committed to real improvements. "We have already delivered Medicare price negotiation on 10 widely used drugs, capped monthly insulin costs at $35 for seniors, and limited out-of-pocket spending for prescription drugs under Medicare to $2,000 per year." In Harris's first big economic speech last month, she announced she would build on these wins, extending access to $35 per month insulin to all Americans and allowing Medicare to negotiate prices for even more drugs. She has also called for ensuring abortion access nationwide. A presidential campaign should be, in part, a debate of ideas, and it's not only reasonable, but also commendable, that people want to know what a person would do in office. That's why Harris has given major policy addresses and released a slew of policy proposals, including a plan focusing on rural America. Trump should be held to the same expectation. The reason there is not more outcry over his debate answer is that we all know his actual plan: get elected and then do whatever the far right once with the ACA, but saying that out loud would not go over well in a debate. As Harris has pointed out, Trump is not a serious man, and concepts of a plan is a silly dodge. But as she also noted, a Trump presidency would have profoundly serious consequences, including life or death outcomes for millions of people who could lose access to health care. When voters mark their ballots, they may consider that a man with Trump's record cannot be trusted with our family's health care. And that was by Elizabeth Warren, who is a United States Senator for Massachusetts and was a candidate for president in 2020. And now, by Peter Stone for The Guardian, Trump and allies plant seeds for chaos and discord, and that's a quote, if he loses, experts warn. Donald Trump and election denialist allies at Turning Point USA, True, The Vote, and other MAGA stalwarts are spreading conspiracy theories about election fraud in order to lay the groundwork for charging the election was rigged if Trump loses, warn election experts and some veteran Republicans. The consequences of the strategy could be dire, John Giles, the Republican mayor of Mesa, Arizona, who spoke at the Democratic National Convention in August in support of Kamala Harris's campaign for the presidency, said that former President Trump and his allies will throw everything at the wall to see what sticks if Trump loses. He added, they will claim everything went wrong if they lose. I would be surprised if Trump doesn't try to foment insurrection if he loses the election. Twin drives by Trump and MAGA allies echo some falsehoods from 2020 about fraud due to voting machines and drop boxes, but now promote Trump's attacks on federal and state prosecutors who filed criminal charges against him for trying to subvert his losses in 2020 and push baseless claims that non-citizens are poised to vote in large numbers. Turning Point USA, for instance, has touted a multi-million dollar drive to get out more votes for Trump in key swing states while holding a few big rallies for Trump where bogus claims are still being made that the 2020 election was rigged and new fears are being raised about potential fraud this year. Trump and his MAGA allies have spent months decrying so-called election interference and lawfare to sully federal and state charges he faces over his multiple and aggressive efforts to block Joe Biden from taking office on 6 January 2021, a tactic that aims both to rally his backers and undercuts the rule of law, experts say. Further, as in the 2020 and 2016 elections, Trump has waffled about committing in advance to accept the results of this year's elections, as he did in his June debate with President Joe Biden. It's a fair and legal good election, absolutely, Trump said, after being asked three times if he would accept the results. But then Trump repeated a false claim that U.S. elections are filled with fraud to justify his sprawling efforts to overturn his 2020 defeat. I would have much rather accepted these, Trump said, but the fraud and everything else was ridiculous. This year also, false charges of sizable voting by non-citizens have become commonplace in the MAGA ecosystem. They are spurred in part by Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson holding a press event at Mar-a-Lago in April on the topic that led the House to pass bills to outlaw voting by non-citizens, even though it is already illegal and historically has been minuscule. To drum up fears of non-citizen voting, True the Vote sent out a fundraising appeal in March that cited the group's efforts to draft arguments for litigation, quote unquote, and other plans to thwart what it baselessly claims will be election chaos this year by way of mass illegal voter registrations, again a quote. Election experts and Republican veterans warn that such efforts by Trump and his MAGA allies are harbingers for claiming the election is rigged if Trump loses. Trump continues to encourage his supporters like Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA to question the integrity of our elections, ex-Republican Congressman Dave Trott of Michigan said. He has no evidence or basis for claiming fraud and is only perpetuating these lies, so he has a plan B to disrupt democracy in the event he loses. And that was Trott. Other critics and experts concur. A lot of false claims are masquerading as efforts to change policy to improve the election integrity, when in actuality, they are just designed to sow distrust in our system if Trump loses, said David Becker, who leads the Center for Election Innovation and Research. This is all designed to manufacture claims that if Trump loses, the election was stolen, and to sow discord, chaos, and potential violence. And that was David Becker. And this is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is this program's engineer.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.